From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our topic on this edition of the program, the global fight against AIDS, tuberculosis, and malaria. Our special guest on this edition of the program is Ambassador Mark Lagon. He's former president of Freedom House, an independent watchdog organization dedicated to the expansion of freedom and democracy. He's currently the chief policy officer of Friends of the Global Fight Against AIDS, Tuberculosis, and Malaria. Friends of the Global Fight is a Washington-based nonprofit organization dedicated to advancing the goals of the Global Fund, a financing institution based in Geneva to accelerate the end of AIDS, tuberculosis, and malaria as epidemics. Created in 2002, the Global Fund raises and invests nearly $4 billion a year to support programs run by local experts in countries and communities most in need. According to the most recent report by the Global Fund, the world is currently at a tipping point in being able to defeat the epidemics of AIDS, TB, and malaria for good. It says that now is the time to maintain the crucial funding needed to not only save lives, but also to protect and build on the progress made thus far. While there is still work to be done, the report illustrates that these investments are working and providing significant returns to both implementing countries and donors. Ambassador Mark Lagon, our special guest, is a former ambassador at large to combat trafficking in persons. He also served as Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for International Organization Affairs from 2007 to 2009 during the George W. Bush administration. In addition to his post as Chief Policy Officer of Friends of the Global Fight Against AIDS, Tuberculosis, and Malaria, he also is a Centennial Fellow and Distinguished Senior Scholar at Georgetown University here in Washington. And Mark is no stranger to these VOA microphones. He's been a frequent guest on Encounter, especially our annual Foreign Policy Look Ahead. We had the pleasure of interviewing him in his capacity as head of Freedom House last year. And now we're delighted to welcome Mark to the VOA broadcast studio to talk about Friends of the Global Fund. Mark, welcome to the program.
Delightful to be with you as ever.
We're very happy to have you. Let's talk about your new hat, your new organization, and remind us first of the purpose of and the impetus for the Global Fund.
A number of people around 2002 really wanted to take on AIDS in particular as a death sentence for millions upon millions of people. And the United States, during the Bush administration, but with great bipartisan support, mobilized funding to create a dedicated U.S. program, the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, or PEPFAR, and the Global Fund. And with the cooperation of the U.N., the Global Fund was created as a new partnership. If you were to invent the UN today, you'd want to invent something that looked a little bit more like the Global Fund, because it includes private sector actors, foundations like the Gates Foundation, civil society organizations, faith-based organizations in the field, and brings us together with UN agencies. And this financing instrument deals with three major pandemics: AIDS, tuberculosis as the chief way one can die of AIDS, and malaria.
That's a great overview. And let's now talk about your organization, Friends of the Global Fund in particular. What is your role?
At the outset of the creation of the Global Fund in the United States, Europe, sub-Saharan Africa, Australia, Japan, nonprofits were established to advocate for the work of the Global Fund. So our job is to look at the progress in fighting AIDS, tuberculosis, and malaria, reassure the American people that their generous tax dollars are making a difference, and a huge dent has been put in these diseases. It's an honest and a conservative calculation that the Global Fund has saved 20 million lives in the last 15 years.
That's really extraordinary. Do you have counterparts then in other countries? In other words, go ahead.
Recently, there was a board meeting of the Global Fund that took place in Rwanda. I visited projects of the Global Fund in Rwanda, and at that board meeting, where big donor countries, foundations, businesses, Global South nonprofits get together, the various counterpart organizations met all together. We're concerned about the will of leading powers, both in the global north and the global south, to keep the foot on the gas pedal of fighting these three diseases, since so much progress has been made in the last 15 years.
So let's talk about that progress around the world. Let's take AIDS, for example, a terrible scourge around the world. Talk about how much progress has been made and where in particular you're seeing that progress.
Yeah. Well, let's, you know, for credibility's sake, let's take an example of stats coming from another organization, UNAIDS, the UN's leading institution on AIDS. They found that AIDS-related deaths have gone down from 1.9 million per year in 2005 to about half that, or 1 million deaths in 2016. The Global Fund has played a crucial part of this, and it has helped give people access to antiretroviral treatment. 11 million people who wouldn't otherwise have gotten access to that treatment have, due to the Global Fund. It means that people are living full lives with AIDS, as opposed to it being a death sentence like it was really 15 or even 10 years ago.
Could you address the epidemic in Africa, in particular sub-Saharan Africa?
Yeah.
Because, you know, we know there's some cultural issues, impediments to acknowledging the AIDS epidemic or dealing with it.
It is a mixed story. The PEPFAR office, the bilateral U.S. Anti-AIDS program, announced recently that the fourth country in sub-Saharan Africa has actually suppressed the epidemic of AIDS, that reached a point in which the viral suppression has taken place in Swaziland, like Zimbabwe, Zambia, and Malawi. And a number of the sub-Saharan African nations are stepping up and devoting resources themselves. The Global Fund holds back a bit of its funding unless the governments themselves put in at least 5% of their national budget, if they're one of the lowest income countries, into global health. And those nations of sub-Saharan Africa are doing that. And in fact, their own contributions even to the Global Fund have gone up. Togo, Cote d'Ivoire, Kenya have all given sizable pledges to the Global Fund, not just working on it at home. But there are problems. In other parts of the world, key populations like men having sex with men, intravenous drug users, those in the sex industry are most, vulnerable. In sub-Saharan Africa, the general population is highly vulnerable, and some substantial steps have been made in East Africa and Southern Africa to fight the problem.
What about other geographic areas, whether in Asia, Central Asia, or South Asia? I'm just curious to know where you see success, but also perhaps some shortcomings that need to be addressed.
Well, the Global Fund has found that there's been a great deal of success tackling the problems of TB and malaria in India, one of the countries where the greatest increase in antiretroviral treatments of AIDS has occurred is Myanmar, as it's sort of come in from the cold and reconnected itself to the international community and relations with the United States and the West. The troubling statistics indicate, however, that there are populations, you know, the key populations I referred to before, who are quite far from getting full treatment. And there has been a disturbing increase of infections for AIDS in Eastern Europe and Central Asia.
That leads me to ask you, Mark, is there a relationship between the type of government, whether it's a democracy or more of an authoritarian regime, and the cooperation the Global Fund receives in achieving its objectives?
I'm glad you asked me that as the former head of Freedom House and a lifelong human rights specialist. Those governments that bring in civil society to be a key partner are crucial. Some governments that are democratic in name aren't very good at cooperating with civil society. They see them as carping critics and opponents as opposed to useful partners. Some less than democratic countries have worked well on this. For instance, a mixed bag is Rwanda that I visited in May. It's been a great economic success story, but Paul Kagame, let truth be told, is a real strongman. But they have empowered civil society to work on fighting AIDS and had a remarkable impact.
Let's talk about malaria, for example. Again, another disease which is certainly preventable. So what about the track record for malaria in sub-Saharan Africa, once again, where we see it?
I'm glad you asked. And, you know, they're the most vulnerable population, our children under the age of five. And, you know, you get AIDS by transmission of fluids, often sexual contact, TB by breathing it in, and malaria you get by a mosquito bite. And there are many, many people who were dropping dead because in their sleep they were bitten by mosquitoes. The distribution of insecticide-treated bed nets sounds like a very rudimentary tool, but it has made a huge difference. The Global Fund, since its inception over the last 15 years, has distributed some 795 million insecticide-treated bed nets. And there's just been a big decrease in the incidence of malaria in the world. It is in the countries where the Global Fund has operated, it is it's striking the amount of success in protecting especially children. And the number of malaria cases that are being treated, is increasing and increasing. Like, for instance, the second half of 2016, the treatment of malaria cases, not just the bed nets, increased by 15%. It's accelerating due to the work of the Global Fund.
You're listening to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our guest is Mark Lagon, Chief Policy Officer of Friends of the Global Fight and former head of Freedom House. I'm Carol Castiel. This is a reminder that our PCUSA podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. Here's a shout out to Alamin Mohammed. He's a loyal listener from Kenya. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. We'd also like to know what you think of VOA's Press Conference USA, and we'd appreciate it if you took a brief online survey. You can find the survey on our Facebook page at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA. We look forward to hearing from you. We'll back to our special guest, Ambassador Mark Lagon. So, Ambassador, I'd like to ask you now about the latest report findings from the Global Fund vis-a-vis malaria, TB, and, of course, AIDS. It seems to me that it shows an increase of cases. So, in other words, you're treating more people. So I want to know, are you just detecting them, these cases, more efficiently, or is there a rise in incidence?
There is a rise in incidence generationally. So there is much more control being achieved for men who are over 40 and women who are over 25, especially in sub-Saharan Africa. So in fact, it's not just the detection that's improving, although it's absolutely crucial that those who are living with AIDS get tested and know it. There's no chance of treatment or viral suppression of the disease if they don't know. One problem is the youth bulge. In the world, demographically, there's a huge growth in the size of the generation between 15 and 24. And when it comes to AIDS, men who are a bit older than that are transmitting AIDS to females who are younger. And so we're doing better finding the disease in people who are slightly older and suppressing it. But that younger generation is the possible source of a resurgence of the disease. And one of the reasons why the very strong U.S. generosity for the Global Fund and for the PEPFAR program needs to continue.
Well, that leads me to ask you, Mark Lagon, about the Trump administration's view of what you're doing and to what extent they're going to commit to the financial commitment. I saw that your organization expressed deep concern about the Trump administration's proposed budget cuts of about $225 million to the Global Fund under FY 2018. Do you think the Congress might step in to alter that?
I do. So there's reason for concern about U.S. foreign assistance and the non-military instruments of U.S. foreign policy getting cutbacks. But we already know that the House of Representatives and its Appropriations Committee rebuffed the president's proposed cuts. It's continuing the very strong funding of the Global Fund. Just a few days ago, the House Appropriations Committee gave the full $1.35 billion that the United States has been over the previous couple of years for the Global Fund. It also matched the $4.65 billion for the bilateral PEPFAR program. Both of those were things that the Trump administration proposed cutting by 17 or 18%. The House Republicans rejected that. There's a strong consensus to fight these diseases, this being a special role for the United States to make a difference and galvanize international cooperation.
Well, that sounds like a very good outcome. Speaking of galvanizing international cooperation, are other partners around the world in the developed world meeting their commitments?
Yeah, and I'm very glad you asked that. So the Global Fund has three-year budgets, and they go through what's called a replenishment, basically asking donors to make pledges. And last fall, in September, the United States made a generous pledge, slightly up from the past. And several nations, the United Kingdom, Germany, Italy, Australia, Japan, the European Commission, all stepped up and increased their previous pledges by 24 to 42%. One of the reasons for this is Congress, in its wisdom, caps how much the United States can contribute to the Global Fund. The U.S. can't pay for more than one-third of the budget of the Global Fund by U.S. law. And that propels other countries to step up. They know they have to match the U.S., and they're doing their part.
In that U.S. dollar amount, that excludes like the Gates Foundation contribution, correct?
Correct. The U.S. funding level is the U.S. government funding.
All right. And with regard to what the developing countries are doing, whether in Africa or in other parts of the world, to do their part, whether financially or institutionally, to try to prevent these diseases, whether it's, you know, economic development in order to prevent malaria spread, you know, what's the role of the Global Fund in advocating for that, in enforcing governments to do the right thing?
From its inception, the Global Fund has had part of its DNA, part of its premise, that country ownership is essential. And if countries don't take steps to strengthen their health systems and grapple with this, it will not have a sustained impact. Again, one of the reasons why the Global Fund holds back 15% of its funds to countries unless they step up and fund things domestically. Also, it's just really striking that some nations at the last replenishment for the Global Fund gave money into the international fund. They weren't just committing money to their own cause, but showing, you know, if they were Togo or Cote d'Ivoire or Kenya or a number of states in the Middle East, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, that they were going to pledge money. For whatever problems some of those governments may have, they're showing a commitment to this international cause. And I think U.S. Leadership is bringing about that burden sharing.
And we note that in the Global Fund strategy for 2017 to 2022, there are four objectives: to minimize the impact of these three illnesses, mobilize increased resources, build health systems, and promote human rights and gender equality. Among these four objectives, does the Friends of the Global Fund focus on any one particular area?
Well, we are particularly concerned with resources continuing to go to the Global Fund. The Global Fund doesn't run programs. It collects money from others, and then it targets it for where it's needed. We need to see more innovative forms of finance, whether it's impact investing, the private sector stepping up, more blended or co-financed programs, maybe buying down of debts for highly indebted developing countries. And that doesn't mean the United States should step back or other global north countries should step back from their funding. Additional resources are needed. But those other elements of the Global Fund strategy, health systems needing to be stronger at the same time as you are working on three specific diseases, and human rights and a gender lens are crucial. That's something I'm, of course, very passionate about.
Indeed, and I bet that's probably the most difficult to target or to induce a change of attitudes toward.
Yeah, you know, four different entities gave positive assessments recently to the Global Fund. A review by the British government, a review by the Australian government, an organization called the Multilateral Organization Performance Assessment Network, or MOPAN, and an organization called Publish What You Fund. They all gave strong reviews. One area that the fund is working on but needs to improve on is its work on women and girls. They are particularly vulnerable, especially with the AIDS issue. If they don't have access to health or they don't have a voice in the politics of their countries, they will remain vulnerable. And that's an important part of the work of Friends of the Global Fight.
Let's turn back to PEPFAR. You mentioned the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief that was, I believe, created under the George W. Bush administration.
Correct.
And it's very popular, and he is known all over Africa for having done that. How strong is that, and do you think that the Trump administration will maintain the funding level for PEPFAR?
Well, Congress will likely maintain the funding level for PEPFAR. I think, you know, it is seen as a legacy of the Bush administration, strongly supported thereafter by President Obama. So there's really a deep well of bipartisan support at a time of vituperative and nasty partisanship in the U.S. political system. So I think it will be maintained. PEPFAR and the Global Fund have really important hand-in-hand cooperation. They need each other. The Global Fund buys lots of medicines in scale that allows PEPFAR to do its business, for instance. But I think it is crucial that the PEPFAR program, particularly working in 13 countries that are targets of theirs, but another 50 that continue to do its work. There are two really interesting developments. One is that over the years, PEPFAR has gotten 12.3 million people onto antiretroviral treatment and in medical method for preventing transmission of AIDS. PEPFAR, over the last 15 years, has been responsible for 12.5 million men getting medically voluntary circumcisions, which contribute greatly to not spreading the disease.
That's really fascinating. Let's talk about the 2030 targets, the global targets for all three diseases, malaria, TB, and AIDS. Talk about what they are.
Well, the UN has set goals overall for development and the Sustainable Development Goals, with 2030 being the target. And really the goal is for all of the diseases to move it out of the category of epidemic. It'll be hard with HIV/AIDS. There isn't yet a cure. There's drugs that allow you to live with AIDS so far. But when it comes to AIDS, the goal is defined as 90% of those who are living with AIDS knowing that they have AIDS, 90% of those being on treatment, and 90% of those on treatment actually getting virally suppressed. That's the benchmark that the PEPFAR program, that the Global Fund, and that the world has. But tuberculosis is something that we could lick because there is treatment that conclusively cures it. And malaria is perhaps the one that's closest to actually being, you know, stopped effectively. And there are certain countries in the world where there are signs that not only by 2030, but well before that, malaria might be eliminated as a real threat.
What would you say are the biggest impediments? You can take each disease or each epidemic, however you want to characterize it, or globally, you know, the biggest impediments to the eradication of any one of these, whether it is it financial, is it more government policy, cultural attitudes, education? How would you describe the impediments to reaching the 2030 goals?
Well, knowledge and education are really important. And so if people don't realize that they have HIV/AIDS or they refuse to get tested, some men don't want to go into an AIDS clinic and get tested. They don't want to be seen as doing so. So really interesting program that the Global Fund has been involved with that President Bush has supported in his retirement has been to get people to go in and, you know, be checked out for cervical cancer and be checked for AIDS, or increasingly in places to get men to get checked for their cardiac health, but while they're there, getting tested for HIV/AIDS. So education, cultural norms are important. It's important that people realize that in some parts of the world outside of sub-Saharan Africa, too, that there are key populations that are particularly vulnerable to these diseases. Children to malaria, gay men, drug users, people in the sex industry who are particularly vulnerable, and they are quite far from the 90%, 90%, 90% goals that I referred to earlier.
How much of your resources do you think are devoted to early detection, which would certainly be cost-effective in the long run and much more sustainable for people who come in contact with the diseases, and prevention? So early detection and prevention, so that in the long run you save lives and money.
It's a moral dilemma of trade-offs when there are finite resources. And if you have finite resources, you know, is your responsibility to keep those who are already on treatment. But it is crucial to find others who are HIV positive and to, as you say, engage in prevention. And that's, I think that's the frontier that gets us towards suppressing all three of these things. We should want for the United States to offer a leadership role of not just saving lives, but actually being able to say these three things, AIDS, tuberculosis, and malaria, are no longer pandemics.
And Mark, before we close, what message would you give to anyone in our audience, whether in sub-Saharan Africa, North Africa, Central Asia, South Asia, all our wonderful friends who listen to Press Conference USA, if they want to learn more about the Global Fund or access to resources in their individual countries with respect to any of these diseases?
Well, the Global Fund has a super website in terms of information, and I also really commend to people the information put out by the U.S. PEPFAR office. But, you know, my message would be, as we say in the United States, the glass is half full rather than the glass is half empty. A remarkable cooperative effort involving Global North donors, governments of the Global South, civil society, people of faith, Islamic, Christian, and other, have stepped up and made a huge difference. It would be terrible to squander the investment of the time and resources of those noble actors and not see this through to the goals of 2030, of actually doing something great, which would be to eliminate AIDS, tuberculosis, and malaria as epidemics.
Mark Lagon is Chief Policy Officer for Friends of the Global Fight Against AIDS, Tuberculosis, and Malaria. He's also former head of Freedom House and former ambassador-at-large to combat trafficking in persons. He also happens to be a very good friend of Voice of America. Mark, thank you so much for coming in, sharing your terrific insights about the Global Fund and the Friends of the Global Fund. We really appreciate it.
It is always a delight. VOA does great work to have people understand what America is about and to understand more about their world.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington. Thanks to Rebecca Ward for booking our guest. Our engineer was Linus Rimkus. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.